Hello and welcome to the ABCs of Green Politics, a podcast which is part of the Left Bloc Political Education Project. I'm Linda Sullivan and I'll be your host for this episode. So you may have noticed that we've already covered you with John hosting you for universities, but we're breaking with convention to bring you this special edition with a focus on Gaza. U is for under siege. Okay, so we're here today with Zaib Shah, who's a Palestinian writer from Gaza. Thanks for being with us, Zaib.
You're welcome.
Yeah, so Zaib has lived in Belfast for the past more than two decades. And so we're just really pleased you're with us today and just want to, provide this platform of the ABCs, the Green Politics podcast, for your story, and to share with us really, I suppose, what's been going on and what more can and should be done.
So
could you just tell me a bit more about yourself? So what brought you to Belfast and what your life is like in Belfast?
I came to Belfast as a student, studied in here. Then I got settled and married in here as well and worked and started my own business. And then went back and worked in Gaza for a few years, the early 2002. And I was involved in the Palestinian as well delegation to Ireland, presenting at some stage. From 2001 to 2003 in the Palestinian delegation in Dublin. And then living in Belfast, work in Belfast, I provide as well my opinion and thoughts of regarding to West Asia or the Middle East, as some would like to call it in here. This expert point of view I get, and sometimes political or cultural or legal. At some stage, I worked as well to translate from Arabic to English and English to Arabic.
Okay, great. And so, this is surely a very traumatic and distressing time for you. As you see the genocide happening in your home. So thanks for making this effort to talk with us. So you still have family in Gaza, is that right?
Yeah, I have my father is an old man, used to be education director. And I have my two brothers, one of them cardiologist, and the other one is used to lecture here, got a PhD in civil engineering. Have two sisters, and one of them, she's a physician, a doctor, and the other one is a teacher. They live together in Gaza. I all have their families as well. They were, father and my brothers were living in the Rimal area in Gaza, and they have to evacuate and go to other parts of Gaza. And then that area were hit with white phosphorus at the time in the early days of the war. My father, suffered a little bit from inhaling from that. And he's lucky, he's surrounded by his family, who are most of them doctors. And they moved from there to the south, to Khan Yunis. And as well, last month, they received orders as well from the Zionist Occupation Army that they have to evacuate as well from Khan Yunis and move to Rafah. So they went on the run as well and left everything behind again. And they are now sheltering somewhere in Rafah. With that city of Rafah is a small border city between the Egyptian border. And it is usually housing around maybe roughly 300,000 inhabitants. Today it's have over 1.3 million displaced people in there. Most of them, they live in the streets. Some of them, they got kind of shelter under a plastic tent, or some of them in this weather, They have nothing even to shelter with. And since there were no warning for them to flee, some of them have, they don't even have enough clothing to protect them from the cold weather. Not to say like much about what is the hygiene situation, what is the aids available for them, since all of these people flee their homes with nothing. They just want to save their lives, and it's horrendous situation in there. I believe myself the whole thing was engineered as part of the ongoing genocide of the people, since when you squeeze nearly 1.5 million in a small tiny area with no facilities, no sanitation, no health facilities, hospitals, we know nearly 90% of it in Gaza is destroyed. I'm talking in Rafah now. This is as an engineered hunger and pandemic to spread diseases among the people, because there is no water, and the people fight for very, very basic things like water and like any kind of form of food or shelter at the minute.
And what communication are you able to have with them at present? And what communication have you been able to have with them since the start of the attack?
I think the communications is an acute problem. They developed a system of cutting it because they don't want the world to see what they're doing. They have killed nearly 100 and maybe 8 journalists till today. That is the amount. If you think of the Second World War, all of the years of the Second World War, there's 63 journalists documented being killed. And in Gaza, within 3 months, around 108 journalists to be killed and targeted. Some of the journalists, they lost their family, whole family, because the journalist, he or she wasn't in there. So there is targeted assassination of journalism to silence the people. And communication is part of this silencing. And that's covers the whole of the Gaza Strip. Since we lose communication with the families, we don't know where they are. We don't know what we can do. And it's just as one of the Israeli ministers in his statement declared, we have to invent more painful way of punishing the Palestinians than death. And I don't know what is more painful than death to the Palestinians, but they do in that. And this is one of the part of it. It's they show them they cannot get in touch with one another. If a house was attacked, they cannot ring the hospital or the ambulances or the civil defense to help them to get the injuries to the hospitals. The hospitals cannot get in touch with their own crew, which is a lot of it is being killed as well. A lot of people will stay under the rubble, and if they are living and they have a phone with them, they cannot ring. It's all part of engineered, I can say, genocide. And unfortunately, with support of some Western countries.
Yeah.
Especially the United States of America.
Yeah. And so in terms of the countries that are supporting Israel, what pressure can citizens of these countries do? Like, is there a role for citizens? There's been demonstrations, in Ireland almost every week. Are these effective, do you think? And should people keep to the streets?
You see, the problem we can see in a lot of Western countries, specifically, I want to name three: the United States of America, the UK, and Germany. They and their media as well. I want to add, I'll give you an example here before I go any further. The media, the Western media, especially if we notice during the International Court in The Hague, when the South Africa submitted their case of genocide against the Zionist entity, we didn't see the BBC or Sky or any of the TVs or Western media is covering the South African submission of their case the first day. Only Al Jazeera and in English or Arabic or that the and other Arabic multi or international outlets cover, but Western outlets didn't. They kept it silent and blah, and didn't do their job to inform their public. The second day of the of proceedings, when the Zionist entity Israel presented its defense, all the Western media were there, ready and covering all of that. That shows they are working at the service of a genocidal entity, and they working to as a PR machine to defend the criminal side in there. It shows the double standards, and all of this we know the media in the West is embedded with the elites, ruling elites. So in the UK till today we had Cameron, the British foreign minister, who engineered what happened in Libya with the French Sarkozy in 2011, and all the mayhem which is in that country, he is responsible for, of course, with the support of the United States of America. Today, he's trying to justify or deny even there is genocide. He's been in the last 3 days on TV, flip-flop with his position. And the same thing, the United States of America is under even dismissing the case in The Hague against the Zionist entity. The same thing, the Germans doing their best, I don't know, from their the guilt complex they have from what the Nazis done in the Holocaust. But the German, let me say this, they don't understand. By showing this massive support to a genocidal entity, they are continuing the Holocaust. They are continuing what the victims of their first Holocaust to commit another Holocaust on the Palestinians. This is what the Germans are missing in here. So the people in the UK and on West Europe and in the United States of America, especially the young ones, are doing very well. They know they don't believe this media and what comes out of this media, and they switched off that media. A lot of them goes to the social media now. Even with the blackout, which is sometimes Meta platform, which is owns Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp, tried to censor the Palestinian narrative in there. So they can see, and even in TokTok and in other like Telegram, there's other social media which shows live from Gaza, the ongoing genocide. And this kind of information showed the people what's happening. There is no lies about that, because that is live coming from people who's been killed if the Zionist entities, drones, find them out, for these journals, I mean. So there is a lot of support on the streets of Ireland, in the streets of the UK, in the streets of even the United States of America, especially from the younger generation. They are refusing what their elite is trying to tell them. I hear that a lot in the streets of Belfast, and from even some in New York and some in London, from these people on the street, they demanding of the dismantling this Zionist entity who has commit genocide and protected by the Western elite, ruling elite, who is complicit in genocide with it. So this is a very good start, but it's need to build on it and to organize this and to make it like it's a platform for a change, and that a change to affect the international institutions to and once to make it representative and democratic of the people. And once is that done, then we can talk about even changing the world order to present the oppressed people as well as the elites.
What do you think of the boycott movement, boycott and divest? So do you see effectiveness there? And we saw like Puma recently pulling out their sponsorship. So, you know, it seems to have seems to be effective to some extent. So do you think there's room there for real change?
You see, the BDS is a very important movement since it shows the people can support the Palestine, and they can, if they don't buy Coca-Cola, they can find an alternative, and they can boycott all of these institutes and companies who are supplying cash to the Zionist colonial entity, which is used to kill and to suppress the Palestinian people, to colonize its land and to abuse their human rights. We have to understand the BDS, it's a powerful tool to stop these multinational companies who is don't care about our human rights, don't care about humanity, don't care about just war. They only care about profit. Once they hit them where it hurts, in the pocket, then they'll start a change. We heard of the in Dublin airport, the Starbucks, the coffee company, the Americans who is boycotted because of stands again with the Zionist entity. They changed the name in their coffee, the name of their coffee shop, because they lost hugely in the Arab world and West Asia and internationally. They lost a huge business, and they start losing in here in the UK and in Ireland, and they start changing the name of the business. But people reported once they entered in there, they seen the same menu. They're trying to bluff the people. The people are, you know, like I remember. And I remember maybe the second week of the Zionist attack on the Palestinians, the BBC Good Morning Ulster radio interviewed me, and the presenter was surprised, shocked from the amount of people went in the streets of Belfast in support of Palestine. And I said to the presenter, yes, the people are educated. People are not just believe the double standards or the lies and the hypocrisies what you present sometimes in the BBC, which we protest outside your doors for years to at least report neutrally. So the people are in the streets, they are educated by different ways and means, and they are smart people. So you can see people during even bad weather coming with their kids, their babies in there to show solidarity and support of Palestine. This is good because you see the Western elite dug themselves in an immoral graveyard, which is very hard for them to get out of now.
Yeah, so you mentioned Coca-Cola and Starbucks there, so also McDonald's.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. And
there's lots. So, you know, if you can see the list of the BDS, I advise the people and advise the businesses in Belfast to call themselves and to join this campaign, which is, they call it the Free Apartheid Zone, the campaign called, and to join the BDS. And in that, they show practical support, even if they stop buying some kind of products in Belfast and the same in different city. This is will shrink the cash flow in the hands of these multinationals who use these countries as the Zionist entity to suppress people's right to make a profit out of that area. Because at the end of the day, the Zionist entity, it's an outpost for imperialist, colonialist projects in the which is the benefit beneficiaries out of this always the multinational companies who want to benefit from ruling that region, from the oil and gas and the international transport, and for countries or the leading rulers in the United States of America, and that to use it as a way of controlling maybe their contenders from not being in business like China and that. So people have to see it from whatever angle they want to look at it, but it's the right way to be in the right side of history is to support the Palestinians now and stop this genocide, because it's. I once was in a marsh in Belfast, and we going toward the American consulate in Israel Millis, and I saw this black card held by a kid, maybe he's 10 years of age, and on it, and this is, you know, is unbelievable. And I said it a couple of times now. The black card reads out, "I cannot believe, and I'm out here protesting genocide today." This summarized, the kid summarized the whole. We are today in 2024, and we cannot stop genocide against people. And I don't know what we've done after the Second World War till today, when we created the international laws and norms and rules and developed Geneva Conventions and all to protect the people right for self-determination and freedom and justice and equality. I don't know what happened. Suddenly, when it comes to the Zionist entity, all collapse, all vibrated, all is gone. And suddenly, will not be exactly the same like today. Now, the whole norms, what we knew about how to deal with each other, how to respect each other, the rules of war, and the international laws is gone. Well, since we saw in the United Nations, the United States of America and the General Security Council just vetoed any resolution is hinting at stopping aggression against the Palestinian. So all the international community now will be, and countries around the world will be afraid of trusting this Western-led international community. And I think the Gaza genocide is buried that. And we have to look from now on as the activists on the streets and the human rights institutions which really care and the institutes which really care about democracy and our lives for tomorrow, for our children, to create a safe environment for us and for other countries who want to live in peace away from these monsters who is controlling the international arena today.
Like how many international laws has Israeli now broken? You know, it's hard to count, you know, and so, yeah, it's just made a farce out of the international human rights mechanisms, you know, because, yeah, when it suits them, when it suits the states, when it suits Israel.
Hypocrisy.
Yeah, hypocrisy. And I just asked you about, like, so we talked about in Gaza, you know, how people are being murdered, how journalists are being murdered, you know, schools are being deliberately targeted, as are refugee camps. Also, we spoke a wee bit before we started recording about the attempts to erase the culture of Palestine, like so many cultural heritage sites are being deliberately targeted as well. So, like, what you know, what's behind that? Like, so that's another deliberate attempt to erase the Palestinian people.
Yeah, I wrote an article on that regard, 2009, I remember. It's called Gaza. 6,000 or 6 millennium history. Gaza City is one of the oldest cities known to the world. Maybe it's the third or the fourth oldest city exists today. And Gaza seems a lot because it's in the heart of the world. So it's an ancient city, and it's this city seeing the pharaohs besieging it. seeing Alexander the Great besieging it, seeing the Turk Ottomans, seeing the English invasion in 1917 and occupying it, and seeing the English is terming it. They want to turn it to a loyal little Ulster to put the, when they promised it as the, when they occupied Palestine, they said they promised Palestine to be a homeland for the Jews. And this is Lord Balfour used to be the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland before he became the British Foreign Secretary at the time. And this is the time of after the First World War. This is, they want to slice the cake. They created the English and the French as victorious powers at the time. What we call it the Sykes-Picot Agreement, which is they cut the whole Arab world, which it used to be one or two entities, into so many slices under the French or the English control. Say Egypt, Iraq, Palestine fell under the English control. And then Palestine itself was, they dismantled, because the League of Nations at the time was created by, which is Western Western, the American president at the time, the English, when they were bragging about the self-determination of the people in that region, they sought self-determination, which is what Wilson talking about, is applicable for them. And then they have to discover in the hard way it meant only for the Europeans. And these people in that region, they have to be occupied and divided and manipulated by the English or the French. And so Palestine was started, the English from 1917 started to bring the Zionist movement into Palestine, who are colonialist white settler movement. This is before the Second World War. This is before the genocide or the Holocaust, which Hitler committed against the Jewish people and the socialists and the communists and the Roma people in Europe. So the design was there, and they started, the English, they brought their forces, which used to be infamous in Northern Ireland, in the north, what they called the Black and Tan. They're the one who started building the institutes for this Zionist entity, which call it Israel today. I call it the Black and Tan state. It's still in Palestine active. So we know the similarities in the laws. In detentions, when you arrest someone in Palestine without accusing them of anything, throwing them in jail, and every 6 months you renew that for them without any list of charges. This is internment, they call it in the north of Ireland. In there, it's a British, the same thing. And it's all of this inheritance from the British occupation of Palestine at the time. So when they came to this state, they came from East Europe, Ukraine, Russia, from Britain, from Germany, from all over. And they got themselves to build this Zionist entity as the colonial post and to control the region in there. And they start developing themselves as a nation from there based on the religion. And the Zionists kidnapped the Jewish kind of religion and developed it as an identity for them, and starting stealing the Palestinian people culture, stealing the Palestinians artifacts and claiming it for them and linking themselves to something maybe 3,000 years ago, the God promised them this land, and they go using that terminology and attack people and evicting them at the time with the help and the training of the British. And after 1948, themselves, they start committing this massacres. What you saw in Gaza live on social media was happening in a lot of villages and towns and cities in Palestine. Took it from Yaffa, which today they call it Tel Aviv, take it to Haifa, to Tantura village. And then there is a lot of documentaries even produced by some of the, what they call themselves, the soldiers' conscience of the Zionist entity itself. In YouTube, you can find. And they start destroying a lot of the heritage of Palestine, and destroying a lot of historical sites. And we can see when they occupied Gaza after the Shifa Hospital, they went to the museums. They went to the second oldest maybe church in the world in Gaza. They destroyed it, this Catholic church. And the same thing in Al-Umri Mosque. It's nearly 1,400 years old. And the Museum of Gaza, or the what they call it, the Palace of Pasha in Gaza, these areas is and the old city of Gaza is being destroyed. And this, I'm talking about sites thousands of years old. We, you know, like we preserve anything maybe 100 years old. Imagine with something, a prehistorical artifacts being destroyed and demolished in there. And the same thing they've done even with the records in Gaza, the libraries of Gaza, which have an ancient scripts being destroyed. This is to erase the people history, to like tell there was no people. This is what they are planning. They were planning to erase the cities, the land, and to claim it as to maybe this is one of the things a lot of them spoke about, their leadership and their statements of intent of genocide in Gaza. To some American congressmen call it, turn it to a parking lot, the Gaza. Finish them, they were saying. And the Israelis were saying to develop it, a sea view kind of properties and sell it. And they were doing web pages, and even the soldiers themselves were marketing that. This is the ugly face of capitalism and imperialism in action in Gaza. And then they go and they steal the custom of the Palestinian, we call it the tob, which is broaded tob, and the cuisine, the hummus, the falafel, all of that kind, and they claim it for themselves. And even their hostesses in the Israeli Al Al Airlines wearing these Palestinian tob, which is thousands of years old. And they go in the West Bank and they burn olive trees, which is maybe 5,000 years old. And I'm talking about an entity from 1948 was imposed on the Palestinians as an occupied entity. Compare that to a 5,000 years old trees and groves they destroy one by bit. What they doing in Gaza, they are doing it in a slow motion in the West Bank as well.
Yeah, and so by destroying so much of like rural and urban land, they're making it as impossible as they can for people to rebuild when this war finishes. So do you think, like, what are you, I know it's hard to think of the end of the war whenever we're still in the middle of it, but when it ends, do you think it's possible to rebuild Gaza and what is needed for that?
You see, one of the strange things when you look what they've done in this war, they attacked the Gaza City to start with. The first thing, they targeted hospitals and then universities and school and primary schools and even nurseries and clinics, mosques, churches, sanitation stations, hygienic centers, the sewage. They got the D10 caterpillar, which everybody have to fight any of these factories anywhere they see them, because they supply the entity with this ugly machine who's even uproot the roads, the street, the pipes, the sewage pipes. It's unbelievable. Like, they want to make sure there is no life will exist in Gaza. And the other thing they say, they brought a huge water pumps to suck the water from the Mediterranean Sea, they say, to fight the tunnels in Gaza. And they inject the tunnels with this sea water, which that means they poison the soil of Gaza and they poison the water aquifer in there. So it will be no soil is fertile for any agriculture. And no water can be used in Gaza for generations to come. But from their genocidal attacks on Gaza before, and the last one, which has lasted, I'm not talking about 2021, There's a one which is the 2014 lasted for 51, and they've done a huge as well amount of destruction at the time. And the Gaza built again and built again. Gaza, as I said in the article I wrote in 2009 about the history of Gaza, Gaza faced even Genghis Khan. Forces who destroyed the whole world were defeated in Palestine. The first country to defeat the Mongols, who occupied nearly the globe, were in Palestine, in Ain Jalut, area called Ain Jalut. This is where the start of the defeat and the cleansing them from the West Asia and North Africa came. A lot of major forces occupied Palestine and were destroyed and left. And the Zionist entity, that's what will happen with them. Gaza will rebuild again, and Gaza's people will not going to be moved out of their land and thrown into the Sinai as they're planning to do. And Gaza will be built again by its own people. And it's this will never going to go back the same, because this is the first step toward dismantling the Zionist entity out of existence and creating a free Palestine for all, equal rights for Jewish, Muslims, Christians, atheists to live from the river to the sea in one entity with equal rights. This is the main thing. And I heard the echo of this in the streets of Belfast, in the streets of London, in the streets of Chicago and New York. A lot of the young generation today in the West, as well in the Arab world and in around the world, they want to see the dismantling of this evil, evil, evil entity called the Zionist entity.
Mm. Yeah, and that is where the hope lies, isn't it? And I suppose that's all that's possible. Like, you know, with imperialism and colonialism, like we're destroying the world we live in. We're destroying everything we hold dear. So the only real future is to dismantle that and build a new world. And hopefully we can continue to stand with the people of Palestine as they do that, as you do that. Is there anything else you want to say before we finish up? I suppose we've talked about the importance of educating ourselves in what's happening, like in terms of looking beyond mass media and the mainstream media, looking to social media, looking to people like yourself to find out what's going on in Gaza now, and also before, you know, what has come before this, the history. The context. We've talked also about the importance of getting out onto the streets, demonstrating, filling the streets like Dublin last weekend, you know, every weekend in Belfast, like any way possible to stand and show our solidarity. And we've talked about the BDS movement and the importance of that. To not give our money to encourage others to not continue to support these corporations that are facilitating genocide. Also, is there anything else then that we people can do?
I think there is an important point, which is people, I think, have to look at now after the shocking war of genocide taking a place in Palestine, and they see in the ruling elites in all West Europe, from the EU to the United States of America to the UK, all of them and their leadership as silent and complicit and refusing to demand to stop the genocide or to cease fire, at least in the Palestinian people. This ruling elite is scary and have to be punished. There is a group of lawyers now, they're filing complicit in genocide cases against a lot of them. But the main ones who come punishing them is the people, because those ruling elites in the UK or in EU or in the United States of America, they brag to the world they are democratically elected, and they represent the people in the streets. Like Sunak, he's not elected, but still a brag, and go to the Zionist entity and show them all the money they want and support, while doctors, nurses, public sectors, workers, demanding for any kind of increase in their wages, and they refuse to give them. But they can finance a genocide, as they did, Cameron himself did in Libya. At the time, I remember doctors and nurses in the street, and they're demanding even 1% increase in their wage, and they didn't give them. But suddenly, the money came out of the treasury and went to war to destroy Libya at the time. So I think history repeating itself in different ways and forms. People have to stop voting for these elites. People have to start finding a real change for the political system in here, since we can see the Labour in the UK and the Conservative are the same thing. There's nothing difference between Starmer or between the Sunak. The same thing goes in Ireland, the same thing goes to the EU, the same thing goes to the United States of America. So it's now the grassroots have to look at a different route, and they organize themselves to impose a change. Well, in that way, we can save humanity.
Yeah. In the march in Dublin last weekend, Bernadette Michalski said that anyone who was there shouldn't vote for any politician that goes to Washington on St. Patrick's Day. They give shamrocks to Genocide Joe, you know, sort of stand with Biden while he is committing genocide in Palestine. You know, any Irish politician that does this should not receive our vote, should not receive our support.
I remember myself and Meredith were addressing a gathering in London in the century of the Easter Rising, 100 years old, the Easter Rising. She's an amazing, 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 huge respect. She's one of the real revolutionary voices we have and we have to cherish.
Yeah, exactly. We'll end there then. Babe, thanks so much for...
You are more than welcome. Thank you for giving me the opportunity. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Thanks for listening to the ABCs of Green Politics and to this special edition on Gaza. Thanks as always to the Creative Workers Cooperative for their support in putting this together. Check out the other Left Bloc podcasts and support us on Patreon if you can. Gura míle maith agaibh.